I think that great stories are about bringing you into something that you might not have experienced before. I think they're also about shifting perspective, which is why VR is interesting for storytelling.
The startup investment landscape is changing, and world-class companies are being built outside of Silicon Valley. We find them, talk with them, and discuss the upside of investing in them. Welcome to Upside. Woo!
Hello, 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 and welcome back to the Upside Podcast, the first podcast finding upside outside of Silicon Valley. I'm Jay Klaus, and I'm accompanied by my co-host, Mr. Bookworm himself, Eric Hornung.
2019 was a sad, sad excuse for a bookworm, Jay.
How many books do you read?
18.
I'm trying to do the math on how many more books that is than I read. It's 18 more books than I read in 2019.
But you have a goal in 2020 to read more books.
That's true. And actually, I probably read some books in 2019. I just didn't have any type of record tracking. How do you even know that you read 18 books?
Well, I have this new app called bookshelf.website that I really like. But what I've been doing for the last, I don't know, 5-6 years is just keeping a notepad of all the books I'm reading, what I want to be reading, and what I've read on a yearly basis. So I added it all to there, but I keep it on notepad.
All right, so your bookshelf, what's that URL? We'll put it in the show notes.
Bookshelf.website/EK Hornung.
Okay, and that's where you can join Eric's full book club. But what are some of the books that stand out to you from 2019 that you read?
From 2019? Man, this would be a lot easier if we had internet. We're here at CES recording this intro, and I forgot my dongle, and the Wi-Fi isn't great. So what it boils down to is we don't have internet, but I have to remember what I read in 2019. Oh, here, I have one.
You've been telling me to read Alchemy, but I think you read that in 2020, so it doesn't count.
Americana, a 400-year history of American capitalism. It was pretty awesome, Jay. Like, I think this whole space of big history, which is covering wide swaths of human history in one 300 to 1600-page book, is one of my favorite types of book because it gives you the context for what was actually happening trend-wise when you go back and read very specific stories and moments and biographies about people's lives.
Did you just make up the phrase big history?
I think I saw someone tweet that about Sapiens when Sapiens was very big, and I don't know if it ever caught on, but I've been calling it big history for a while now.
Well, speaking of storytelling, today we are speaking with an author on the show, also a founder, but haven't talked to a ton of authors on the show. Today we're speaking with Lakshmi Sera, the co-founder of Tiny World Productions. Lakshmi is an educator and journalist with a focus on immigration and migration. She has produced content for newspapers, radio, and magazines from Ahmedabad, India to Los Angeles, California, including AJ+, KQED, Die Zeit Online, and the New York Times. With a passion for experimental, innovative projects, she was an Oculus Launchpad grant recipient and member of YouTube's VR Creators Lab in Los Angeles.
So much new stuff's happening in the world of media right now and kind of hitting the forefront. I mean, podcasts have been around since the RSS feed, but now they're kind of getting bigger. Newsletters have been around for forever, and now they're getting bigger. So we have all these new mediums and types of content that are dribbling out, and I'm really excited to see what VR brings to the world of storytelling and media.
Lakshmi's book is Crafting Stories for Virtual Reality, which made Gary Shapiro's book list. Gary Shapiro is the president of CTA, with the organization that puts on CES. So at the CES official displays where they show the books that they recommend, Lakshmi's book is right there on the shelf, Crafting Stories for Virtual Reality. And to your point, Eric, we have all these mediums for storytelling, but does storytelling at its core change? I don't know. We're going to find out.
And listeners, if you have any thoughts on storytelling or narratives or the impact of VR, reach out to us at UpsideFM on Twitter or any social, or send us something a little longer at hello@upside.fm.
Jay, if we were going to give out executive titles for Upside, which one of us would get CEO?
I would.
That was so quick. You didn't even contemplate me being CEO?
It's obvious.
What would I get?
Not co-producer.
not co-producer. I don't think that's in the executive category. So if I was hiring for an executive position, I probably wouldn't look for co-producer in that bucket, huh?
How would you go about hiring for an executive position?
I mean, that's easy. I'd go to our friends at Integrity Power Search. They're the number one full-stack, high-growth startup recruiting firm based between the coasts. They partner with venture capitalists, private equity groups, and CEOs to build amazing teams for the world's most disruptive companies. I mean, since 2012, they've successfully executed over 600 searches and are on track for 200 more just in 2019. Their clients have raised, collectively, over $2.5 billion in venture capital and counting.
You're not trying to replace me as a CEO, are you?
I didn't know you actually got the title. I thought this was just a hypothetical.
No, it sounds like we've made a decision. We've come to a consensus. So if you guys are looking to talk to the CEO of Upside, you can talk to me. And if you're looking to hire your own executive help, you can go to Integrity Power Search at upside.fm/integrity to find out more about how they can help you. Lakshmi, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Jay.
It's not often that we have an author on the president of CES's book club on the show.
Yeah.
Awkward way of saying the president of CES has a book club. Lakshmi wrote a book, and it is in the book club, and we feel honored to have you here.
Great. I feel honored to be here.
So what we usually start off with on Upside is the background of the guest. So can you tell us quickly about the history of Lakshmi?
Okay, like how, like in 30 seconds? Or
wherever you want to go.
Whoa, I mean, but we only have half an hour. Okay.
Okay.
Yes, I guess I was born and raised in the Bay Area, San Francisco Bay Area. I grew up in the South Bay in Palo Alto before it was like Palo Alto. So yeah, that's interesting context. My dad's originally from India. Let me jump to like the more interesting stuff. I went to a hippie school where you are barefoot and play with clay and art from kindergarten to eighth grade. My mom also taught there. And then I went to like standard high school, and then I went to college. And I think we need to ask me another question.
Okay.
What led you to writing a book? Like, when did you decide you wanted to write a book? Tell us about the book.
Oh, okay. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Well, I've always loved books. I've always been interested in writing a book, but I never knew or thought that it would be about virtual reality storytelling. I focused on immersive storytelling, doing a 360 video project for my master's at UC Berkeley, and it was around the 2015 humanitarian refugee crisis, and we did a series on myself and my co-producer, co-writer Melissa Bosworth, did a series on asylum seekers in Germany. And we were attempting to use 360 video virtual reality as a way to bring people more inside the story, to like have a different perspective on what was happening. And out of that project, we basically spent a year and a half, like heads down working on the project. And then when we came out of and finished our master's, we realized we actually had this skill that not many people were using very well. And we knew how to create a 360 video, direct people's attention to a certain extent. But there was also so much more that we could do within that. And we had been starting to talk to creators about what they were doing, how they were doing it. And it was really interesting and exciting. So one of our professors, actually, while we were finishing the project, was like, you guys should write a book. And we were like, haha, that's funny. Especially after coming out of like an edit suite, like, you know, for all night, 6 a.m, and your professor's like, you should write a book. That's like pretty funny. But then we realized, oh yeah, we should write a book, and it would be really fun to talk to all these amazing creators from like New York Times and The Guardian to like small production studios that do awesome stuff, but not that many people know about it.
When you were starting to think about doing 360 video as part of the story, were you trying to solve for the problem of how do we get people to feel more empathy towards these asylum seekers, or like what spawned that idea in the first place?
Part of it was the draw of empathy, but it was also the idea of shifting perspective, because a lot of the stories and a fair amount of journalism talks surface level about, you know, a million refugees or X number of migrants, 800,000 DACA recipients, but what does that, or, you know, the number of homeless people in San Francisco, what does that actually mean? What does that look like? And what are the voices of those people? And that's what we wanted to kind of delve into.
It's hard to fathom numbers like that on like a human scale.
Yeah.
You know, it gets so big that it just sounds almost like a big number and not 800 individual human beings.
Right, yeah.
Where else is this immersive storytelling useful? So one area is when you're trying to humanize something. Where are some other verticals, maybe?
Yeah. Well, so we talk about this in the book, which is fun. But so in terms of like perspective shifting, where you're trying to like get inside a story or from a different perspective or see something from multiple perspectives, there have been some interesting stuff, things that like take a person from looking at the same thing from multiple different viewpoints. Another one that has been interesting is like data visualization, both for like basic things like the U.S.-Mexico border wall. The USA Today and Arizona Republic did an amazing series of stuff. It was everything from audio to video to like a headset experience. You put on the headset and you're actually standing at the border wall. And so you have a better sense of like, oh, what does this actually look like when you look up and left and right and even behind you? What does it sound like? They have a couple of different spots on the wall, so not just the physical wall, but there's some areas where there's not actually a wall. So like, here's a big mountain and here's the water behind you.
When you're doing immersive storytelling, is it narration over like a visual experience, or is it here's a person talking to me and I can look and engage or look away?
That's a really good question, because it depends on the story and it depends on the creator and the what you're trying to get out of the story as well. The Euronews does a lot of 360 storytelling, and all of theirs is hosted. It's hosted, but you can also choose like whether or not you want to look at the host or you want to just like look off and see what's
happening. Hosted meaning there's some person there that's walking through the experience.
Yeah, exactly. And there's a person there, and they're being like, we're going to this, we profiled their piece on a seed vault, and like somebody's there and they're showing you what's happening, but you can also look over here at the other part of it. So hosted experiences definitely are there, but then there's also things that are just like, well, so then in terms of shifting perspective, there's stories where you are at the center, where you're kind of in control, and then there's other stories where you're like on the shoulder of someone, so like seeing what it would look like from that person's perspective, but that person is like kind of guiding you along. And the one that comes to mind with like the perspective, one of the first ones that really got people into it was Clouds of Resedra, which came out, I think, at the end of 2015, 2016. And that was done by the United Nations and Chris Milk's production company, I want to say. And we have an interview in the book about how they kind of developed that. And it was using audio narration to bring you through the story, but then also like 360 video like from the perspective of a young girl at a refugee camp in Jordan.
At this stage of technology, who is the best creator, not like individuals, but what type of person or organization has the tools or resources necessary to do immersive storytelling? And putting that in the context of their audience, like, do they need to have an Oculus? Do they need to have some sort of headset to receive this? You know, like, it seems like the technology itself to be immersed in the story may be kind of inaccessible at a mass market level right now. But tell me if I'm wrong.
Yeah, I think there's definitely varying degrees of answers depending on who you're talking to. In terms of, so first of all, like backing up just a minute, like how are we defining immersive? So is it a 360 video, which is like, okay, you can look all around, but it's like not, you can't walk through it. It's like 3 degrees of freedom, if you will, instead of 6. So you can't like walk within a space. So who has the capacity to create the like super high end would be one question, and who has the capacity to do just like the more basic ones. But then, so there's the more virtual reality immersive, and then there's the like augmented reality immersive, which could even be as, well, not simple as an audio piece that goes with like sunglasses, like the Bose AR things are doing a lot of experimentation with storytelling using audio on your face.
So maybe a better way that I could have asked that is like, talk me through the spectrum of what is available and what immersive could mean.
Yeah, okay. It's available, it's okay. The things that are available are everything from consuming content on your phone to consuming within a headset. And I think then there's like varying degrees of phones and headsets, but like, you know, the Oculus, we've got the Vive. So to some of that high-end stuff is really great, but also there's not actually that much great stuff out there, which is one of those content versus, what's the thing? Content problem. It's like a problem of the chicken and egg. Like, it would be great if there were so many cool experiences that people could check out, but there's not actually that many right now, I would say.
It's kind of a marketplace problem.
Yeah, marketplace problem. And then you have certain people, well, I mean, and then you have, like, what's the one that was really famous? Oh, Magic Leap, that, like, I just read an article about how they're not doing so great, but I don't know.
They had a big whale, right? That was their thing?
Then they have a there's the video of the gymnasium where, like, you can see this giant whale jump out of thin air, essentially, and then crash into the floor as if they're crashing into a wave.
When you're taking a picture, we have a pretty good understanding of, like, what makes a decent picture, right? So we can, even me, who is not a photographer by any means, I can take a picture on and put it on Instagram, and it's like, oh, that's a decent enough picture. If we're building a film, we have an idea, maybe we're not good enough at it personally, of what makes a good film. Jay actually just made a film this summer.
We.
Sure, I executive produce, which is the best job in the world.
You just told him what to do.
Yeah. I just provided.
He financed the thing.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I look forward to checking out your film.
You know, like, kind of what goes into a film, and, like, there's theory around.
Yeah.
Here's how shots should transition. Here's how things should work and flow and frameworks. When you look at immersive, and I'm talking, like, fully immersive here.
Okay, yeah.
What are the differences between shooting a film and thinking about a 360, 6 degrees of freedom, fully immersed experience?
Well, I think one of the main things is that there isn't a defined filmic language for which to, like, create a lot of. Within 360 video, there's a little bit more of a, oh, okay, there's certain rules, but within, like, a fully immersive experience, even the, like, what is happening on the controllers is not a standardized thing. So you might have somebody who's using this point, a button to teleport, and you might have somebody else who's using a different button, like, to do other things. And then, so it gets very confusing on the more granular level. But then also, if you back up a little bit, a lot of the people who are, I mean, I think the things that are cool and great are done by more collaborative people who are, like, coming from both gaming and film. But if you have a straight film background and you're just trying to put the film onto the 360, it's not going to translate in the same way. And you can see things that I've seen things at conferences or South by Southwest where you can, like, okay, this person's coming from a film background because they're just doing everything that they should in film, whereas, like, there's things that are happening all around you. So did I answer the question?
I think so. I think the takeaway there is that you can't just take the things from film.
Yeah.
But I guess maybe on a more granular note, like, what is specifically different?
What is different? Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, so one of the things that's different is that, well, there's a variety of things. I guess I could talk a little bit about perspective shifting. So there's one piece we profiled in the book that is taking the perspective of a female if you're facing one direction and the male if you're facing the other direction. And this is like a commentary on tech, and it's called U-Turn for obvious reasons. And it's done by Nathalie Mapp. I hope I'm pronouncing her name correctly. So it's a comment, and this one is a fictional experience. And so one of the things you can do with VR is you can shift the perspective. So if you're looking one direction, you see things from the perspective of the woman. And then it's also audio, like, tracked, so you hear the audio from her. And then if you turn around, you hear the perspective of the man. And if you're kind of in between, you can kind of hear by looking over your shoulder.
Is this like a relational argument or?
It's about, yeah, thank you, sorry. It's about a woman in tech, and it's, but it's done more of, not as a comedy, but as like a commentary. But it's an interesting perspective because you might not see certain things if you only look in one perspective. And there's certain things that are done within like a theatrical and placement way. So, and also to get you to see who you are. She has a Skype call at the beginning. So I think what's different in VR also depends on, like, to what extent is the VR, like, you know, 6 degrees of freedom or like 3 degrees of freedom or just like super basic AR, like, audio, of course. But what's different in VR is that you can also, you can get the perspective and also shifting. I think you can also get like an internal audio. There's the The Guardian did some interesting things about like autism and the perspective of like a baby. So like you hear an internal dialogue as well as an external dialogue, but you're also seeing everything that's happening around you.
What is 3 degrees of freedom versus 6 degrees of freedom?
So you could imagine like a video on your head for 360 video, and you can look up and look down and look left and look right. Whereas for 6 degrees of freedom, you can actually move within the space. Yeah.
Let's take the medium completely out of this. You have a background in journalism.
Yep.
What makes good storytelling generally, regardless of the medium?
That's a great question. Well, I mean, Marshall McLuhan said the medium is the message, but I think that great stories are about bringing you into something that you might not have experienced before. I think they're also about shifting perspective, which is why VR is interesting for storytelling. I'm trying to think of my favorite stories. They also can kind of, they're not always linear in the traditional sense, and they allow you to like go different places.
Think about an example of a story that you've told. Tell us the medium of that, but also like as much as you can remember, what was your process of saying, I think there's a story here, here's how I'm going to construct it, and why, if you have an example like that?
I think there's a couple different series of stories that we've done with Tiny World Productions, which are taking that theme of like we have these huge numbers and we want to understand what's behind those numbers. So from the asylum seekers in Germany, where we had 9 different perspectives on asylum seekers, is one example. We did a piece on homelessness in San Francisco, which was the perspective of 2 women and just kind of their stories. I think sometimes stories, like you think it has to be a huge, complicated thing, but sometimes the most interesting stories are just like from the people standing or sitting right next to you that you pass every day. Another series, like a shorter form series we did for Fusion Media, was on DACA recipients, so deferred action for childhood arrivals. And there's a general feeling of that people know, like, oh yeah, a DACA recipient does this and that. But when you really go into some of the stories, we profiled someone who was a teacher and someone who was an 18-year-old, and just getting a little bit deeper into what they think, how they feel, and what their daily life is like. Those are the ones that I find interesting.
Does any of that translate to the world of... So I feel like this is all... It feels very documentary, everything we've been talking about. One of the like most common things that we see in our world are like business profiles and business stories. Can you tell immersive stories about businesses the same way you could tell immersive stories about humanity?
Yeah, I would say yes, but it also depends on the business. Like, there's a lot of process. Okay, I'm thinking about a story we did on women in the cannabis industry, and there's a lot of process parts through within the cannabis industry that people don't like know about, and what happens like from seed to sale. And so that is like very much to me more directly business. Yeah.
Tell us about Tiny World Productions and the scope of what you guys do.
So Tiny World Productions was founded to try to bridge the gap of people not really understanding immersive media or what could be done. So initially we started doing sort of like one-off stories for like, first we did for local media, then we did a couple of pieces for the New York Times when they were experimenting with VR and 360 video. And then through that process we ended up like writing a book. So it was sort of like a broader education for people. We've also done smaller like workshops through the Berkeley Advanced Media Institute, as well as like more independently. And then more recently, we've been doing more like consulting on different modes and formats. So if you're thinking about doing an AR project or a VR project and you're wondering like, could this work? Will it work? Like, then that would be something you could talk to us about. Or if you wanted to train up people to be able to do 360 video stuff, then we would do something like that.
So part of training is, here's the times you can use immersive technology. Here's how to do that. But another part is, I think, saying this is the time to use, it's not worth it. So you said the medium is the message. When is VR, AR, 360 interview not the right media for the message?
Yeah, good question. So, for example, if we were to have a 360 camera right here, it wouldn't be that interesting because there's not a lot going on. Well, actually, there's kind of a lot going on around us. But it wouldn't be that interesting because, like, the focus is on the audio and the focus is on, like, us. Like, it could be kind of interesting because nobody is sitting across from me over here. So if we had a 360 camera, but, like, what? That's not telling a story. That's not, like, adding anything to the story. So that would be a bad example. But I think it really depends on what you're trying to communicate. I mean, we talk a little bit about this in the book. There is a sense that if everything is going to immersive media, then it's not so much like, this is the older question of like about the internet, like, do we put it on the internet? Like, okay, everything's on the internet, so it's not about do you put it on, it's like everything's there. So if we're like going towards like everything is immersive, then like everything will be immersive. But like there is a point in time now where it doesn't, not everything needs to be like created as like immersive content, partially because not everybody's using the devices or like not consuming in as immersive.
Do you see a world where I log into Netflix and all of the things that I can watch are immersive?
I'm kind of more skeptical when it comes to like future of immersive stuff, because I think there's a couple of different factors that need to happen for that to be a scenario that would be cool. And partially that is because I think that if the means of creation are not democratized, and so I mean like if there's not a diversity of people who are able to create for these mediums, I don't think that they're going to be able to take off.
What are those factors that need to happen for this, for that reality to hit?
Well, somebody needs to create something that like is not super ugly on your face when you put it on. Like normal glasses would be making a lot of sense. And somebody, I think we interviewed somebody from the New York Times who said a similar thing. Like nobody wants to put that thing on their head. There was a great New Yorker piece that called it a hamster casket. Like that is, wow.
Like the like, boxy one.
Yeah,
on the
yeah,
front.
Yeah. So like nobody really wants to put on. Okay, maybe there are some people who like are really excited about putting VR headset goggle things on, but I think for a lot of people they just are not that interested in putting something on their face or head, which is one of the reasons why augmented reality, where you like still can be in your space and like look at some stuff and like look away and look at stuff, or you have your glasses on and you can just like do whatever, is interesting.
Yeah, I think a lot about video games that are narrative driven being like a really exciting space for immersive VR. But it seems so, like I said earlier, it just seems kind of far off from just the accessibility of people generally. One, the accessibility of creators to be able to make narratives themselves. Like it would be really hard to get some of this perspective shifting and perspective diversity without making that true. And, you know, you wouldn't want to just play 50 narrative Call of Duties or...
And I would be exhausted. It's a lot of running to play those games.
That's a good point. How many of the experiences have you...
How many experiences have I...
Have you experienced? You actually have to...
That's why we win awards for this podcast right there.
That you actually have to physically move around your real life space versus you're clicking and kind of moving forward with a remote or some sort of handle.
I went to VR World in New York City to try a bunch of all their crazy things. So I've like... done a fair amount of the, you know, what's the one where you slice fruit? That's really entertaining. Yeah.
Fruit Ninja.
Yeah, okay, obviously. Fruit Ninja, and like some of the boxing ones, those are intense. So, yeah, I guess I've done a few of them. I'm not like a super...
Do you think that having space that you physically move your body around is a constraint for the future of these immersive storytelling?
I think it's both... Yeah. I mean, I think that even the idea of having a certain amount of space that you have to like set up your whole thing, like with the Oculus, you got to set the, what are those things called?
The corner of the room.
The box thing. Sensors. Thank you. You have to set the boxes at the corner of the room. That's totally limiting. It's kind of interesting to see how like libraries were like starting to set up some things. Because it's completely limiting if you think that, like, people have dedicated VR rooms. I mean, I guess some people do, but...
I didn't think about that. I was thinking, yeah, of just moving around.
Oh, moving around. You have to be able to move around.
That's a good point. Yeah.
So I think, yeah, even, like, what's kind of interesting is that... The fact that you have to be able to move around in some things adds an element, but it also takes another element away because you can't, like, yeah.
Like these simulations that have 6 degrees of separation.
Yeah.
Are you moving your legs and walking, or are you tabbing through on a remote?
So some of them are, like, clicking to jump. What's that? There's another word.
Teleport.
Thank you. We're really on it. So some of them you're clicking to teleport, and then other ones you're, like, moving, you're walking, and there's some, like, sciencey interesting things about how you can actually, with your headset on, you can actually walk a certain, they have things you can stand on that you can walk, and it feels like you're going for longer or not actually straight because you're actually curving slightly. That's interesting. But some of them you're walking, or and some of them you're teleporting.
What aren't we asking that we should be asking?
I think some of the stuff around, like, what, there's some interesting things that are coming out with VR training with Striver, who's the company that Jeremy Bailenson and another guy started from Stanford, and they are doing a lot of training for things like Walmart and football players, two very different things. So VR is being used in more, like, specific industry things, but then also within that, what are we not, like, questioning about? And some of that is, I think there's some concerns when it comes to privacy, when it comes to, like, access, who has access to all of the, like, metadata surrounding, you know, VR training programs, and, like, who is being trained and how are they being trained and how can you make sure they're being trained accurately or, like, correctly. Some interesting stuff.
You ever been to Sleep No More in New York?
I haven't, but
I... Oh, man. Yeah. Talk about an immersive experience. You've done it?
Yeah. I did before you.
Love it. I've done it twice.
Wow.
Once with my mom, who is an English teacher, loves Shakespeare. She loved it.
I've heard great things about it, so I need to check it out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Talk about immersive. Awesome. Well, Lakshmi, it's been great to talk with you. We're a little bit over time. If people want to learn more about you or the book, where should they go?
Tiny World Productions, TNYWRLD with no vowels. On Twitter... Most things are there. Of course, read the book. It's called Crafting Stories for Virtual Reality. You can find out more about the book at craftingstoriesforvr.com. And I have an immersive newsletter, a text newsletter, that I will tweet about, and you can find out more info there.
Awesome. Awesome.
Hey, listener, have you ever wanted to get a message in front of the Upside audience but weren't sure how to sponsor the show or weren't able to do a long-term sponsorship? Well, now you can just go to upside.fm/classifieds and let our audience know anything that's going on in your world, whether it's an event, an application, a special coupon or deal, or just letting them know who you are, what your company does. All you have to do is go to upside.fm/classifieds and you can place an ad on this show. That's upside.fm/classifieds.
All right, Jay, we just spoke with Lakshmi. What were your hot takes?
Hot takes are, sometimes when things are new, people really want to scramble that thing and do the traditional execution in the new medium. And something that really came out of this interview for me that links and tracks a lot of things that I see happening in other arenas is the old way does not necessarily always make sense in the new medium. And also, using a new medium isn't always what you need to do to get your point across, you know?
Yeah, I think there's going to be some development here in terms of what you can actually do, what you can't actually do, and some really, really, really creative stuff that comes out of this new medium for storytelling. I love the idea of humanizing very large numbers as a construct. I don't love the idea of this 360-degree video. Every time when we were talking through this interview, Jay, my first experience with 360-degree interview was, I think it was Coldplay or Nickelback or
gross. Some, what?
Somebody did a 360-degree music video in the desert, and if you looked at it, you would see them playing in the desert as a 360-degree video. But then you would turn left. And
it was like, why'd you do a 360-degree video? The rest of it was just the desert.
Look at this photograph. Don't need to look to your left. Just some desert over there.
Yeah, so that's how, as I'm thinking about immersive experiences, like, was I immersed? Yes. Could I look behind me? Yes. Was there anything to see behind me? No.
And that's exactly the point, you know? Sometimes, just because you can do it in this new way, if you don't actually exploit the benefits of that new medium, it doesn't make sense. You know, we're talking on microphones right now, and we're actually in a location that's kind of interesting. But most of the time, as podcasters, it also doesn't make sense to have even video going because, you know, we have post-production for a reason. We're not perfect. A video version of our podcast where we're flubbing through the intro three times because I forget our spiel, not that interesting.
Yeah, we've been doing this 150 times, and you've still flubbed the spiel one out of every two times.
Well, you've done twice as many intros as I have. We did the math on this.
We did do the math on this.
We have 65 standard episodes and 36 coffee chats or so. So it's about 2 to 1. I get rusty sometimes. But I'm excited to see how this medium evolves. I think there is an awesome potential here for streaming services like Netflix that are doing movies, even video games, going to concerts from your living room, like... There's all kinds of excitement here. Storytelling is an aspect of virtual reality and augmented reality that I haven't really thought about. I love this perspective shifting idea. I think that could bring a lot of empathy to people's lives. But to Lakshmi's point, if we can't democratize or make more accessible the tools for making stories to give new perspectives, the same perspectives that are being marginalized now will continue to be marginalized even more so potentially if the tools to create can't get into their hands. So hopefully there's a company that maybe we can find on the podcast that makes that easier. Any other hot takes from you, Eric?
I think it would be so cool if Serial would have been an immersive audiovisual experience.
I like that. I mean, I think any story can be enhanced by further, deeper forms of the medium, meaning Serial, obviously an audio show. Hell yes, you can make that better with a video aspect to it. And even more, greater if you can walk through it, or maybe S-Town is an even better example. If you're walking through John's shop, you know, imagine actually walking through John's shop. That could be really powerful. So we'll be tracking this as it progresses.
And I hope that one thing it progresses to is virtual worlds, which is an area that I have a specific interest in. So if you guys know anybody who's working in the virtual worlds space, so think Second Life or things like that, definitely reach out and connect us at hello@upside.fm. And if there is anything you want to do to share this episode or connect with us otherwise, you can reach out to us on Twitter at @upside_fm. And we'll talk to you next week.
That's all for this week. Thanks for listening. We'd love to hear your thoughts on today's guest. So shoot us an email at hello@upside.fm or find us on Twitter @upside_fm. We'll be back here next week at the same time talking to another founder in our quest to find upside outside of Silicon Valley. If you or someone you know would make a good guest for our show, please email us or find us on Twitter and let us know. And if you love our show, please leave us a review on iTunes. That goes a long way in helping us spread the word and continue to help bring high-quality guests to the show. Eric and I decided there are a couple things we wanted to share with you at the end of the podcast, and so here we go. Eric Hornung and Jay Klaus are the founding parties of the Upside Podcast. At the time of this recording, we do not own equity or other financial interest in the companies which appear on this show. All opinions expressed by podcast participants are solely their own opinion and do not reflect the opinions of Duff & Phelps LLC and its affiliates, Unreal Collective LLC and its affiliates, or any entity which employ us. This podcast is for informational purposes only and should not be relied upon as a basis for investment decisions. We have not considered your specific financial situation nor provided any investment advice on this show. Thanks for listening, and we'll talk to you next week. Never mind. Bro, that can't be mad. I'm lighting it on fire. Used to run victory last. And still, I'm not even tired. It's all about the timing, about the timing. Yeah, that's what they say. Well, I'ma keep on.